Aha. One who? Mom. Me. Sarveshu. In all. Bhuteshu. Living entities. Shantam. Being present. Atmanam. The Paramatma. Ishvaram. The Supreme Lord. Hitva. Disregarding. Archam. The deity.
All right. Oop. I think it's all right. No, it's all right. Just leave it. Leave it. I think it'll be all right. Maybe. Anyway.
Bhajate. Worships.
I just had to put it in my pocket.
Modyat. Because of ignorance. Patsmani. Into ashes. Eva. Only. Ajahoti. Offers oblations. Saha. He. Translation. One who worships the deity of Godhead in the temples but does not know that the Supreme Lord is Paramatma, is situated in every living entity's heart, must be in ignorance, and is compared to one who offers oblations unto ashes. So you can repeat. One who worships the deity of Godhead, in the temples, but does not know that the Supreme Lord, as Paramatma, is situated in every living entity's heart, must be in ignorance, and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. So this is a verse Bhu Pujaris. It is stated clearly herein that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his plenary expansion of Super Soul, is present in all living entities. The living entities have 8,400,000 different kinds of bodies. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead is living in every body, both as the individual soul and as the super soul. Since the individual soul is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, in that sense, the Lord is living in every body, and as super soul, the Lord is also present as a witness. In both cases, the presence of God in every living entity is essential. Therefore, persons who profess to belong to some religious sect, but who do not feel the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every living entity and everywhere else, are in the mode of ignorance. If, without this preliminary knowledge of the Lord's omnipresence, one simply attaches himself to the rituals in a temple, church, or mosque, it is as if he were pouring butter into ashes rather than into the fire. One offers sacrifices by pouring clarified butter into a fire and chanting Vedic mantras. But even if there are Vedic mantras and all conditions are favorable, if the clarified butter is poured on ashes, then such a sacrifice will be useless. In other words, a devotee should not ignore any living entity. The devotee must know that in every living entity, however insignificant he may be, even in an ant, God is present. And therefore, every living entity should be kindly treated and should not be subjected to any violence. In modern civilized society, slaughterhouses are regularly maintained and supported by a certain type of religious principle. But without knowledge of the presence of God in every living entity, any so-called advancement of human civilization, either spiritual or material, is to be understood as being in the mode of ignorance. So, Yomam Sarveshu Bhuteshu Santam Atmanam Ishvaram Itparacham Bhajate Modyat Vasman Yeva Jahoti Saha. Om Ganat Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmeritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, of course, this is a very heavy verse, and it's very interesting. As personalists, we often forget this point, and that's very interesting. We are personalists, but we forget that God is in every living entity. Therefore, we sometimes deal with people from the mind, not from the heart. You understand? We deal philosophically. Actually, we should see through Shastra, but also we should balance it with the heart. You understand? Just like we were talking about yesterday. I remember many years ago, before I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, I had this sort of Mayavadi philosophy that I was the only living entity, that everybody else was my imagination. And if a tree fell in the forest and I wasn't there to observe it, it didn't fall. You understand? That's really like ultimate selfishness. So, and then when I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, I actually had a philosophy whereby I could criticize everybody else. So that made me very happy too. Because like we were talking about yesterday, I could call everybody a demon, a rascal, rakshasa. And that increased my false ego. So sometimes we see when people take the philosophy of Krishna consciousness without integrating it into their heart, it actually increases the false ego, haven't we? Just like we see devotees sometimes dealing with each other in very, very harsh ways. Of course, Krishna here says, Lord Kapiladeva here says that then your deity worship is useless. So, as I made a little advancement in Krishna consciousness, I realized that it was good to be compassionate and empathic for other living entities. Now, it's interesting, there's a difference, technically, of course, Prabhupada would use it synonymously. There's actually a difference between sympathy and empathy. And I'm going to describe the difference. In sympathy, we feel bad for someone, and actually we're still the center. You understand? I feel really bad for you because it's my feelings. But in empathy, we take the other person's feelings as our own. You understand? So we consider them just as important or more important than us. Of course, that's the principle of para dukkha dukkhi. You understand? Considering others' happiness more important than your own happiness. And sometimes when you're sympathetic, you don't consider, you just consider, you know, your own feelings more important. But empathically or compassionately, which is a similar thing, then you consider others' feelings very, very important. So what's the need to develop this empathy or the sympathy? I mean, there's several needs, of course. One need is to avoid being punished by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, that's like we were describing yesterday, there's negative needs. Because if you're not compassionate to other living entities, you're actually being punished by Krishna. I'll give you an example. Once upon a time, there was this sage, Visvamrita Muni, and he was performing his tapasya. He wanted to become a Brahma Rishi. Actually, the reason he wanted to become a Brahma Rishi was that he was envious of Vasishtha Muni. You know that story? I think you know that. You all know that story. Visvamrita Muni, and he goes back a long way. Visvamrita Muni saw the Vasishtha Muni. He was a king. And he saw the Vasishtha Muni had a Kamadenu, a desire cow. And he said to Vasishtha Muni, give it to me. And Vasishtha Muni said, I can't because I need it for all my sacrifices. It provides the ghee. And so then he forcibly took the cow. This, because it was a desire cow, was able to manifest soldiers and kill off all the soldiers of Vasishtha Muni, of Visvamrita Muni. It was pretty interesting. There's different soldiers that came from the rear end and the udder of the desire cow. And then eventually, the cow returned to Vasishtha Muni. And then Visvamrita Muni, he started performing sacrifices to become more powerful than Vasishtha Muni. He became a Rajarishi, you know, just like the sage amongst kings, and he had all these celestial weapons and he was firing them at Vasishtha Muni. And Vasishtha Muni just like pulled up his staff and went, Om and they all disappeared. So this Visvamitra Muni, he really wanted to become more powerful and eventually become a Brahma Rishi. So while he was meditating, trying to become a Brahma Rishi, he was meditating under a tree. And while he was meditating under a tree, birds also live in trees, right? And birds are not toilet trained. You can toilet train a dog. Did you know that? Anyone who's had, any of you have pet dogs? Probably not. In America, they toilet train them, so they know when to go outside. They actually, the dogs have a special door to the house. Did you ever see that? Where did you see it? In Canada? In Canada, yeah. They're very sophisticated there. Not only do the people have a door, the dogs have a little door. And the dogs and the cats. So anyway, they're trained. So, but the birds aren't toilet trained. Just like I have one friend. Actually, he's from India. He has birds in his house. And I asked him, I said, what do you do? Don't they leave droppings all over the place? And he said, yes, but they only do it in the living room. So, he's actually from Gujarat, quite interesting, yeah. So he has, anyway. So this bird, he did his little thing on top of Visvamitra Muni's head. He gave his blessings. Bloop, like that. And Visvamitra Muni, what did he do? He looked at the bird and the bird burnt to ashes like that. And as a result, he lost all of the fruits of his austerities. Isn't it? Thousands of years of austerity just by burning up a bird. Pretty interesting. So that's a great danger. When you mistreat a living entity, you actually, lose good fortune materially as well as good fortune spiritually. Of course, ultimately, Visvamitra Muni, he did become a Brahma Rishi, and he became peaceful and happy and Krishna conscious. But that's another story. And ultimately, he associated with Lord Ramchandra. There's a story in the Ramayana. But still, that example is there for us. That if one disrespects any living entity. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also gave an interesting example. His disciples were walking, I think it was either Vrindavan or Mayapur, and there were some beggars there. And the disciples just ignored the beggars. You know, the beggars in India, they're begging, and just ignore them. And he said, this is very bad. A devotee should be naturally compassionate. You are thinking, he said to his disciples, you are thinking, I'm a devotee. And I'm greater than these people. Right? Isn't we think like that too? Just like sometimes I may think, I'm a sannyasi. You're all lower. Serve me, you rascals. Cook at least 50 preparations for dinner. Right? You rascals. So anyway, so naturally, we take whatever opportunity we have to enhance our false pride. Don't we? I mean, that's our nature in this world. Whatever opportunity we have, whether it's a position in the Krishna conscious movement or a position in the government, or someone gets married and the husband just like, then he thinks, now I am the king of my castle, right? You have that saying here? A man is the king of his castle. And then this is the problem in the movement too, that even people get married and the husband takes these quotes out of context, that the woman should just serve and the man is the boss. And anyway, they take all these quotes and then they start preaching to their wife like that. You ever see that? And they just take things out of context to enhance their false prestige and their false ego. Really horrible. But we do that. We're taking every available opportunity to do that. So getting back to the story of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his disciples, he chastised them. He said, you should feel compassionate. You should give them some money. I mean, obviously, we don't want to give charity to someone when they're going to spend it for liquor or something like that. Just like usually when I go to the holy places, I give people prasadam. In America, if you give charity, I remember one time some bum came up to me and he said, you know, give me a dime for a cup of coffee. You know, give me some money for a cup of coffee. Of course, I didn't want to support his coffee, but I knew he was going to buy liquor with it. So that's charity in the mode of ignorance. You understand? So if you give something to someone, they're going to misuse it. You're also responsible for it. So it's a fine line. But still, we should feel charity. Just like you had this very nice prasad distribution during the floods, right? And it was prasad distribution. I mean, they're not going to misuse prasadam, I hope. I mean, how can you misuse prasadam? And we gave out to everybody. We didn't consider, devotees didn't consider, you know, who was a Hare Krishna devotee and who was not, right? And all the other religions, basically, they were considering that, right? Like if they did charity work, they would check first. Are you a Methodist? And someone said, no. Then no food for you. Something like that, right? Someone told me that. It was like that. But the devotees, they didn't consider, you know, are you a Methodist? You are a Hindu? Are you a Buddhist? Because no Buddhists here in Fiji, right? Are there any Buddhists? No. There are. Okay, I have not seen yet. Are you a Shakta? Are you a demon? It doesn't matter. We didn't ask those questions. We just gave everybody prasadam. That's compassion. You understand? Because whoever it takes prasadam, even if they're a demon, they make spiritual advancement. So this is how devotees should feel. Just like when I go to Govardhan, I think there's many people begging there, so I'm just thinking, I'm not thinking I'm greater, you know, I have all the money, you know, and I can live like a king and the rest of you guys, you know, live like beggars. I'm thinking, how can I serve you? Actually, when I walk through the streets or through the parikrama path around Govardhan, I'm actually thinking and seeing the beggars, I'm thinking, you know, what service can I do for you? And that's actually the proper mood. And that's why I'm doing this project right now, to do a school and prasadam distribution and, you know, all sorts of help and economics for the people in Govardhan, because I feel like I should serve them. Not that I'm better than you, but somehow or other Krishna has given me more facility than you, and then it's my duty to serve you. If you have more facility, more money, more intelligence, anything you have more than other people, that's all right. Ishtavasyam idam sarvam yakincha jagadam jagat. Tena chaktena bunjata. Magudha kashyasya. That's your quota, there's no problem with that. But Krishna has given it to you so you can serve others with it. He's not given it to you so you can just get a Mercedes. Or buy your wife, you know, 200 saris, 300 pairs of shoes. Isn't it? It's like you come home and the wife says, what have you gotten for me today? And you say, I'm serving Krishna, not you, rascal. Anyways, you shouldn't say that. That's dangerous. But in any case, we should see like that. Whatever facility, ability, money we have is meant to serve others. Right? That's all. It's meant to serve others and bring them to Krishna and help them even materially in a Krishna conscious way. It's like we have these nice schools in Vrindavan. And in these schools, they're helping the people with the food, with the clothing, with everything, and they're also giving them Krishna consciousness at the same time. A very important principle. We should not neglect that in our Krishna consciousness movement. So this, anyway, not mundane charity. No, mundane charity we're not interested in. But the charity that brings people to Krishna, that gives people Krishna prasadam, this is actually to be desired. And it must come from the heart too. So the question is, how do you actually develop this feeling from the heart? How do you become like someone like Vasudev the leper? You've heard of him before? It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There was once upon a time, there was a person named Vasudev the leper. He was a leper. You know what a leper is? You used to have leper leper colonies here in Fiji. That's where, you know, things happen, like your fingers come off and your nose, and there's worms all over your body. You've seen this? I've seen. So this Vasudeva, the leper, he had worms all over his body, you know, where there was leprosy. And what did he do? Does anyone know what he did with the worms when they fell off? He put them back on. Wow. Can you do that? I don't think you could do that. He put them back on. Now, one may say, isn't that crazy? Putting the worms back on. Of course, ultimately he got the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him, and then his form became a very beautiful form without any worms. But the reason he got that mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is because of that compassion towards other living. Now, how does one, or what was he thinking when he was putting the worms on his body? I mean, that's my question. Was he thinking, let me do this austerity so I can become Krishna conscious? No. No, because austerity, just torturing your body, is not going to make you Krishna conscious. As Lord, who can I talk? As Jatabharata says, Rahuganaita tapasa niyati na chejya nirvapanad grahadva na chandasa naiva jalagni suryarvanaha mahaparabhrajobhishekam. Then you can't become Krishna conscious by doing austerities. Just because you sleep very little or eat very little doesn't mean you're going to become Krishna conscious. Just because you put worms on your body. I mean, if I thought I could become Krishna conscious, I'd look for worms here and put them all over my body. Or like yesterday, we were sitting down to take prasadam. They gave me these garlands that had, not worms, that had ants all over them. So if I thought that would make me Krishna conscious, I'd just sit on an anthill. You know what an anthill is? And just say, ants, eat away. But that's not going to make me Krishna conscious. So what was making him Krishna conscious when he was taking the worms and putting them back in the body? The consciousness that... Actually, it's called role-playing. The thinking that, you know, if I was a worm, if I was one of these worms, how would I be feeling? That's what it means. That's what it means to actually put yourself in other people's shoes. Or, of course, worms don't have shoes. Put yourself... I don't know what you would say about worms. Put yourselves in other worms' squiggles or something like that. But... Yeah. So in other words, you put yourself inside, in the other person's position, which is a really important principle. That in psychology is called role playing. And some of the youth who are going to be taking our seminar, we're going to practice that a little bit, which is really interesting. That's actually a very wonderful thing. That if you really want to develop compassion towards anyone or any entity, just put yourself in their position. It's a mental adjustment, but it'll help you understand things. Like you put yourself in the position of the worm. What is the worm thinking? Huh? Does anyone know? The worm is not thinking, let me attack this guy. The worm is thinking, I'm hungry. That's what the worm is thinking. The worm is not an evil entity. The worm is just thinking, I'm hungry. And then it's cold, so when it comes... So that's what the worm is thinking. So you put yourself in that position. The worm is thinking that. Don't you feel some compassion for someone like that? Just like you get hungry sometimes, don't you? You ever get hungry? And it's just like unbearable when you're hungry. You become nasty when you're hungry, don't you? You know, you come home from work and your wife hasn't prepared any food for you, and just say, where's the prasadam? She said, well, it'll be about an hour from now. And you get angry. Sometimes. I'll cook yourself, I'm sorry. That's better. More practical, actually. No, but those of you who have someone else cook, you get angry with them. When is it coming? Just like the other day, I was at Rupanuga's house and there. So many things are going on. I said, where's the prasadam? Let's do it quickly. Let's do this reception really quickly. You know, get the foot bathing, your one foot instead of two. You know, just do it. You know, get it over with, you know. I want to eat. So the worm is also thinking like that. So you see, all the living entities, it's interesting, they have the same needs that you have. You're not something special, although you would like to think so. You are in 10,000 the tip of the hair, and there's unlimited other 10,000 tip of the hairs living entities in addition to you. You're not the most fallen, you're not the most elevated, you're not the most anything. You're insignificant. And that's hard to digest, isn't it? You're insignificant. Of course, you're significant to Krishna. Krishna loves you in spite of being very, very tiny. But as far as like everything else, you know, you're like the frog who's trying to puff his cheek up, you know, and exploding. You're insignificant. That's what it means, you know. So mani na mana dana, that's how we can develop the service attitude towards others. You know, this humility, understanding that really I'm nothing. Or I'm very small. I'm not nothing. That would be Mayavadi stuff. But I'm very tiny, tiny. And you're just as important as me to Krishna. And your feelings are just as important as my feelings to Krishna. And then try to understand the person's, you know, if you're dealing with a person, try to understand their feelings. That way you can avoid, you know, being harsh with people. Because when you're harsh with people, they have same feelings that you would have if someone was harsh with you. Okay? So that's actually an interesting sort of mental thing we can do. Actually, it comes from the heart. It's not really a mental thing. We can actually role play and say, you know, how is that person feeling? Let me put myself in that person's shoes and understand that. And then we deal very, very compassionately with it, because everyone is just simply trying to meet their needs, whether it's a need for food, whether it's a need for freedom, whether it's a need for play, whether it's a need for, you know, air or something like that, or, you know, basically, or a need for love. You know, everybody has a need for love. I know you don't like to hear that. At least one brahmacharya here who doesn't like to hear that. But anyway, so everybody has that need. All these different needs. And that's everybody is expressing or acting to fulfill those needs. And when you understand that, you can actually feel compassion for other living entities and treat them properly. And then once you do that, you get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Because you actually, their ultimate need is a need for spiritual life. A need for happiness, a need for Krishna consciousness, a need to connect to Krishna, right? And then you become very happy. When you're trying to fulfill your own needs, then it may be all right. But ultimately, to see others' needs as important makes you happier. That's really important. So anyway, so this is the verse here. So if we want to actually have the deities accept our service, that's the consciousness we should develop. And the next few verses are about this too. In the next few days, I'll be speaking about the same thing from different angles of vision. So any questions or comments? We have about 5 minutes. Yeah? That's right. But not only Parabrahma, but Atma. There's two. As the Upanishad said, there's two birds in the tree. Okay?
When I was in the Anisal, I was going to church.
Yeah.
The Bible says that those who believe on him, then he gave the right to the children of God.
Yeah.
Which means they're saying that only those who believe in God, Christ, and the Paramatma.
Yeah, well, that's crazy. The only those who believe in God get Paramatma in the heart? Yeah, but we don't believe in that. We say that everybody, whether you believe in God or not believe in God, you get Paramatma. And if you don't believe in God, Paramatma is giving you the intelligence to be a good atheist. Matak smritir jnanam abhavanam cha. Where is you getting your intelligence from, you rascal? I'm not supposed to call people names. Anyway, I'm just using a little humor there. So, you know, where else are you getting your intelligence from? Sarva Jonishu Kantiya Murtiya Samavantiya, as Krishna says. Aham Bija Pradapita. I'm the father of everybody. Everybody's my, like Prabhupada would sometimes comment, even about some theology where people say that God only had one son. You understand?
Yes.
And we're all sons and daughters of God. But, of course, Jesus Christ is a special son. We understand that. Very, very special son. I mean, we're not comparing ourselves to him. But God has... Prabhupada was very funny one time. He said, Prabhupada said that sometimes the Christians say God only has one son. You can have so many sons, but God can only have one? What's the problem? Is he impotent or something like that? You understand? An ordinary man, at least originally in Fiji, a man could have like 12 sons or 15 sons. Not anymore. People don't have that many. But God can have unlimited. Sarvajani Shukundiya. I'm the seed giving father. Aham Bija Padapita. So we don't accept that, nor does it. It's interesting. I mean, I'll tell you about, if you want to ask about Christian theology, that was not taught by Jesus Christ, nor was so many other things that people believe in the church, like the virgin birth and everything, that was not taught by Jesus Christ, nor was it even taught by his immediate followers. It was taught by people who followed after the followers, who didn't even meet him, by different theologians. And 90% of Christian theology is coming from the Greeks. It's not actually coming from the disciplic succession. It's coming from people like, and I'm not going to get into the details, from Plotinus. I don't know if any of you heard his name. Or there's something called Neoplatonism, which he taught. Anyway, I don't have time. I could give a whole class on this, but I don't have time to talk about it. But the theology is actually coming from the culture that they were in rather than from the disciplic succession. Whereas our theology comes from evam parampara praptam imam rajasya yo vidhu. We're not accepting the modern culture and integrating our theology into it. That would be crazy. But sometimes people try to do that. They integrate modern culture and they try to adjust the rules and regulations in Krishna consciousness. And I'm not going to get into details because I don't want to offend anybody. But they try to adjust the principles or the ultimate goal or the philosophy of Krishna consciousness according to the modern day. And the church is generally doing that. The Catholic Church does that. They actually change things from being sinful to be non-sinful as the time goes on, right? The Pope issues his edicts. And he says that nowadays we can accept these things. Just like, for example, contraceptive, right? It's not legal yet in the church, but I'm sure within a little while it will be. They change moral principles according to the cultural milieu, the cultural situation. But, so anyway, we are interested in what's coming from God. Dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. Dharma actually only comes from up there, right? It doesn't come from you or from me. It comes from up there. Okay, that's the magic conch. We have to... And right now, so we want to thank everybody for listening so nicely. A lot of people came to class today. So today we spoke about compassion, how to develop compassion. And for the youth, we're going to be talking about that more. For the old people, I don't know. What can we do? Prabhupada said, I better not say this. Anyway, no, forget it. I won't say it. I'll get in trouble. Anyway, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.